We're talking Chapter 8, The Upside Down. Stay tuned.
The Stranger Things After Show, presented by Netflix.
Welcome back to the Stranger Things After Show, presented by Netflix, the final chapter. I'm here with my friends, my family, my binge family, Roxy Stryer.
I'm sorry, did I stutter?
Tiana Hobson.
Which one of you guys sharted?
And Zach Wilson.
Good night, Mike. And good night, Stranger Things, because that's the season finale.
Aww. It's been great binging with you guys.
Yeah.
It really has.
Mm-hmm. I found the chocolate pudding.
Yeah.
Y'all, all I can say is, this show is everything. I am obsessed. I am obsessed with how it ended, and let's jump into it.
Well, I'm obsessed with how much you love your co-host that you didn't even care enough to say that you're Jesse Janity.
Well, I'm sure you guys already know about me. Yeah, I am Jesse Janity, and I'm sorry, I'm just so super excited about this because we found Will.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we want to know what you guys think, so leave your comments down below. Hit subscribe on youtube.com/Netflix. Leave us a little love. Show us a little support. Check us out on iTunes as well. And if you haven't, if you just so happen to be clicking this and you're like, whoa, all these episodes, make sure you guys go back. After you watch the first episode, we're here. We're talking about each episode. So you guys, extra double binging. All right, on the after show and the real show.
I like that. Extra double binge.
Yeah.
Extra double.
So make sure you get two packs of pudding.
Okay. And a couple Coca-Colas.
Coca-Colas. Speaking of binging.
Some Eggos. Just washed down.
Nancy and Jonathan, they done left the kids at the gym.
Everybody left those kids at that poor gym.
But every time I want to get mad about something like that, they were doing something beneficial, and if they hadn't done what they were doing, who knows if the monster would have gotten hurt, and then who knows if we would have been able to tackle the monster. So all of the times I want to look at Nancy and Jonathan and shake them and say, don't leave kids unattended. You can't do that. Well, they kind of did the right thing.
But in the previous episode, Nancy tells Mike, hey, let's be more open with each other. Let's not keep no more secrets. And then she runs off and doesn't tell anyone where she's going.
That's
in
true.
The very next like scene.
Well, we knew there were going to be secrets when they both promised to do no more secrets, and immediately they lied to each other about where their romantic interests lie.
Were they lying to each other or to themselves?
Both. Ooh. Make you outie.
Think.
So when they get back to the buyer's house, they had to put all the light bulbs in.
They had to set up all their bear traps, get their fire ready.
Their yo-yos.
I had that exact yo-yo.
It was an awesome montage because you're just seeing them like they have a plan in place, like
little Home Alone-ish.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like they know the monster can come through these walls, so we're gonna like contain it to the house because if it comes in, it's a lot easier than like going into the woods and just hoping you put it in front of the right tree.
Yeah.
But it works. Like they had a plan, they put it in motion, and it paid off.
I was glad that
Steve showed up.
Yeah, well, I was glad that Steve showed up, honestly, because when you get in this crazy world, you stop remembering how crazy it is because it becomes the normal to you. So now we've watched 8 hours of this show, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, of course. They're setting up these traps for the monster. The house is in disarray. The lights are talking to them. That's just what it is. And then Steve comes in and reminds us, hey, by the way, this is ludicrous. You have a gun to my head. Are you out of your mind?
He's like a Matt from Vampire Diaries.
Yes, and as an audience member, I needed to be checked in that moment. Like, hey, wake up. Look at what's in front of you. This is wild. So Steve was very necessary in the scene. I see you, Steve.
But I love that Nancy pulled the gun on him.
Yeah.
She was out.
Whoa.
She was not playing around.
I felt like she would have shot him in that moment.
I kind of got scared.
In the arm or leg or something. Yeah, like, she wasn't going to kill him.
She would have shot the wall.
She's a crack shot, so.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah. I was getting scared based on what Jesse said in the last chapter about him coming in and trying to be heroic and then accidentally getting stabbed or shot. And I just see her back to back with Jonathan with this gun like a Charlie's Angel. And I'm like, the monster's going to jump in and she's going to shoot and it's going to disappear and it's going to hit Steve and
she
that's
was
how he dies.
Badass, though.
She was so badass.
I wasn't even mad about it. When she pointed the gun, usually I'd be like, oh, girl's gone crazy. In this case, I was like, you got to do what you got to do. There's a monster coming. Steve, get out.
Yeah, this is an intense situation. The only way to like he's not willing to leave right now because he sees some unexplainable things. But like, so it's like, all right, you know what? If you're not going to leave because we're talking to you, we can't tell you there's a monster coming because that's just going to confuse you even more. I'm just going to point a gun in your face because that's an effective way to tell somebody to leave.
Why do we think he was actually there? He says he just wants to talk to Jonathan. Are you guys on that same page? Yeah.
I felt he was coming to apologize, to bury the hatchet with Jonathan after last episode when we saw him trying to redeem himself.
I think just the same way that he was trying to make it up to Nancy, at least in a small way, by washing off the spray paint, he's trying to come over to Jonathan to be like, hey, I shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. Like, I don't want this to be a thing between us. Like, you're in a rough place right now. I shouldn't have taken it out on you. All that.
Kind of loving Steve a little bit in this moment.
Oh, just now?
No, always.
Always. I am feeling like I should give Steve a little bit more credit because last episode I was really harsh on him and today I was yelling at him when he ran to his car after she said go. I was like, stop being a little pussy, Steve. And then he came back and he manned up. So I was like, okay. Yeah.
Here's the thing that I love about Steve is that this is a truly three-dimensional character. It's so easy for bullies. Like with Troy, we didn't get to know him that well. Right. So he was just like a bully to us. But Steve is like a fully three-dimensional, fully formed character.
Yeah.
And he delivers on heightening the drama of the show while also having his own journey.
Let me ask a million-dollar question right now, though. Are you guys Stancy or are you Jancy?
Jancy.
Yeah, I'm Jancy by the end of this.
I'm Jancy still.
I think I'm Stancy and hard.
You really felt comfortable at the end of the episode with them sitting up with each other?
Yeah, I really did. I really did.
I really thought at the end. I'll save it for later.
Well, so they're in there. The lights start flickering and the monster ripped through the ceiling.
Yep.
Came down and
it causes a lot of destruction.
It's
who's paying for all the repairs in this town?
Now it's such a bummer because still at this age, I'll get home.
Do you have that third world insurance? Other dimension.
Like, how do you explain to the insurance claims person a monster broke through my ceiling and so I need you to send someone to fix it?
See, Joyce, maybe you should have got that insurance for Will.
When I get home at this age still, I'm looking under the bed, so I'm already scared. If there was the insurance, I'd be having it. But now I feel like, okay, I'm going to have to come home. I'm going to have to check my closet like I always do. I'm going to have to look under my bed like I always do. And now I'm going to have to put my ear to the ceiling. Like, that is a whole nother step before I can go to sleep now.
And you're pretty short.
Yeah, so and I'm really short, and I only have a little step stool in my room to get to the top of my closet. I'm going to have to get a full-blown ladder.
But are you like that person? Because, like, when I have to keep my closet cracked open, sometimes I have to move everything too because the silhouettes of clothing starts like, is that
obviously I'm that person? Yes.
But Roxy, not to add to your nightmares or anything, but so it coming through the ceiling basically established that it doesn't need to be just one specific place. It can come through any surface.
Yeah,
it can come through the floor.
Like, no, I'm already checking the floor. Obviously, any person who's checking for monsters checks the floor, but you don't check the ceiling.
It can come through that wall, that wall, that wall, the TV.
Like, what if the lights just started flickering? Right
oh my
now?
God! It can't come through the TV.
Yes, it can. Poltergeist. You ever see that? okay, so the monster rips through the ceiling. They're running. Steve runs out to the car, and again, foreshadow with the Tom comment. You always running away.
Mm-hmm.
But he did it.
I love that they brought that back.
Yeah.
Good work.
The monster attacks Jonathan. Whoa. Do not drip your saliva on my face.
And Jonathan,
you know,
close your mouth.
The hottest breath, too.
Jonathan was so into this makeout session. Jonathan opened wide and was like, give it to me, baby. I want your spit. Yes.
All I kept screaming was, close your mouth. The drool is getting closer. Close your mouth. Close your mouth.
Nancy shooting him. No effects. Like, this monster is bulletproof.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, first it's like, I don't know what to call it, zizzing into Jonathan's mouth. And then it's indestructible. But bullets can't kill it, but like the nails can go through.
Right, that was interesting.
So, well, it's similar to like a Kevlar vest, I guess. Like right. A Kevlar vest, you can stab through.
We're not dealing with Luke Cage. We're dealing other material.
But like something like the speed of the bullet like bounces off. So I would say that skin is probably similar to Kevlar. So that informs the strategy. Like Kevlar can burn. Like it's not a material that's indestructible. You can hurt it.
But so can that's it burn? When they learn. Because I'm still unclear on whether what exactly
How
killed
did
him.
Hurt? Yeah.
Did this injure the monster, which is why later on it was easier for Eleven, or did it temporarily hurt it, or did it make it leave? I don't know how much we can actually affect it as humans, and maybe you just need a supernatural force.
Did you also kind of think? I don't know. It was kind of like, really, Steve got beat up by Jonathan, and then he came in here and like whooped the monster's butt.
But he had a baseball bat.
I mean, yeah.
You know better than anybody. Have you ever had enough built up anger where you could take it out on something? Like anytime somebody's kicked your butt, anytime anything's happened, you take that back.
Never happened.
Yeah, and you picture somebody and you just go swinging.
Like a pinata.
He was picturing Tommy. Everybody's ever said he ran away. The fact that he thought his girlfriend was cheating on him even though they hadn't DTR.
Mm-hmm. So no superhuman strength for the relationship.
And we also don't, they sort of established in this episode that the monster is closer to an animal. So it doesn't have, like, a fully formed human intelligence. And there's some stuff that I'm like, questioning that and, like, what its true motivations are. But it's just reacting, I think, to being hurt. And it's probably surprised that it's getting hurt at all. Because right. it doesn't ever get hurt on this plane.
Was anybody feeling a little bad for the monster?
No.
What? Where did that moment come for you?
Only in the sense of, like, if it is just truly an animal, it doesn't know what it's doing necessarily. And that's where I'm really curious about its origins. Like, we see the egg at one point when Joyce and Hop are in the netherworld. Like, in the Upside Down. And so if there was an egg, does that mean that there's a bunch of these running around? Is it just the one? And is it like a phoenix where it like recycles? Or are we harvesting? Is it like, is that its goal to like find like pods where it needs to like harvest a person? That's why it's humanoid shaped.
What is its life support? We'll talk about when we get over to the other side, but that all of the attachments there, is this something it needs to survive? As humans, we should understand better than anybody the survival instinct. So I did kind of feel bad for this monster because I feel like it's never been taught another way. It doesn't have a choice and it seems to be very lonely.
Okay, let something attack you. Yeah, you're just going to sit here and
I don't
empathize.
Feel bad for this monster even in the slightest bit because, yes, we don't know its intentions or anything, but what if the monster was actually calling out for Eleven to get into our dimension so that he could take it over so they could start invading our turf and our territory?
Who's they?
Whatever he is or it is.
So you're
maybe
assuming
there's more
multiple.
And they're trying to infiltrate our world. We don't know how. We don't know anything about it, so I can't feel bad. All I can assume is that he's after my people. And I'm not going to stand for that.
I feel like it's more like a paranormal activity thing. Like, in the sense of, like, Dr. Brennan was putting this girl in this plane. And in doing so, you're messing with, you know, the physics of law. And so now you're tapping into something. And this creature sees this live being in this world of decay and death. And it's like, oh, what is that? So I'm wondering if it's more the lab kind of shook up this plane, and because they kept putting her in there, that's where it, like, the monster's not really, like, after anybody specifically, but the energy of Eleven keeps it in this area, kind of, almost.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel bad for the shark when it tries to bite my leg off, so I'm not going to feel bad for this monster.
It is an endangered species.
I do feel bad for the sharks. I'm always feeling bad for the sharks.
No.
And I'm also feeling bad for the six kids that we found out are taken, but I don't know. I think we don't understand this monster's motives, and until we do, we can't write it off.
Well, we aren't writing it off because I don't think it's fully dead. We get to, let's talk about the this lab, because Joyce is captured with Hopper, and the people at the lab really want to know how she's getting in contact with Will. Dr. Brennan says that six people have been taken this week, and he's trying to do his little Karen situation with Joyce, like, yeah, you know, like, I'm your friend.
I was so proud of Joyce for not being the Karen here. She hears him and then says, no, you took my son, you've done all these things, you pretended he was dead, you put out a fake body, you're not my friend. Peace, come on.
That said, though, I do believe him when he says, like, they don't really, because he said they don't really understand it. Mm-hmm. They're just like, they're reacting, and it's CIA or whoever, their baseline of like operation is, okay, somebody died because of what we did, cover it up. So even though, so like, not that that's excusable, but it is at least understandable that that's what they're doing, but they do legitimately, I think, want to save Will.
I'm under the impression now that the CIA has made a mistake and they have created this monster. I don't think they found it. I think they made it. And probably by trying to do something similar to what they did with Eleven or what they did with Eleven's mom, they were running all of these tests and somehow they created a creature that now they don't understand and now they don't know how to control. So they were probably trying to create something as a weapon and it went too far and now they don't know how that they can play puppet anymore.
I definitely believe it was created.
So I don't feel... So the CIA, I'm not feeling that bad for when he's sitting there having the speech. I don't think he's opening up all the pages to his book. I don't think he's telling her all the information. I think it is true that he doesn't understand it. Of course he doesn't. If he did, he'd be able to control it, but I don't think he's letting us know everything.
Interesting. I still think that I think he's being honest in that they found this creature in this alternate dimension and they unwittingly unleashed a monster that could destroy tons of people into this world by pure carelessness, because that's the hubris of science. Like, you meddled with something you didn't fully understand, and now you're reaping the consequences. You guys,
what if Russia created it? So that way they knew Eleven was coming into this world and listening to them, and they were like, oh yeah?
Boom.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, is she Russian?
That would take it to a whole another level.
I just don't feel like you find something like this.
No, I definitely think... And ever since the shark thing, and maybe that was just in reference to the blood, but I don't know. It's just the way the monster looks, the shark thing, I'm kind of with you on that it might have been
created. There is something... I do think there's something more to it. Like, after we saw this, after we saw the egg, the fact that there were six people taken, not just six kids, but like six people. So it probably started by taking the scientist that was at the very beginning. I'll bet you that this creature, like, in its most natural state, does not have, like, a humanoid form. It's probably shaped or something.
Do you think the tendril thing was it as a, like,
infant? Well, because the tendril, work on the tendril, but it doesn't work on the
alien. That that's, like, it's like an incubator. And it's using, I think it's taking over the whatever forms it can take. So I'll bet you, like, there was going to be, like, there could have been a deer-shaped version of this monster with the Seymour flaps, but it took over the scientist in episode one at the very beginning, and that's the humanoid form that it takes. And so when it comes into our reality, that's what it's being. And when we see like the egg and everything else, that's it trying to reproduce using other people. So you would have had like a little short Will one, and yeah, maybe there's a Barbara one like cooking somewhere.
So we're mentioning these eggs now. We are believing that these eggs are about to hatch more monster-like.
Well, we only saw the one that was open. I have a feeling like that's our monster. And it was maybe a recent birth, and that's like when it breached into our reality.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. You took it that way. I took it like they're breeding.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely started to think that.
Me too.
And like, and maybe even if, because I'm still under the impression that there's one thing, so it's self-reproducing. Oh. Is that a thing?
Yes.
Because if it's only one, then
both body parts.
Yeah, so it would be doing it by itself, because I still believe that there's only one, but I don't know if everyone believes
that's
that.
That's a dangerous creature.
Yeah.
It's like the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park.
Who's in a lot of pain that we should feel very bad for.
Now, evolution, so just to kind of rewind a little bit, an interesting part was Carol... with Hopper and how they were gonna basically, how we saw the first time, they put him back in his house and then put beer around him and it was like he was drunk, but this time it was they were gonna shoot him up and make him a junkie.
I think he probably has a history of drug abuse. They probably have looked into this and we're going to use that against him. There is nothing that creeps me out more on television or in life than watching somebody else who is trying to recover or who isn't currently using and somebody else goes and pricks them. Oh, this was awful to watch when I thought it was happening. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was.
I felt so bad because we know why Hopper is so depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We got those flashbacks, so.
Well, let's talk about that flashback, actually, because we saw Hopper with his daughter. She started breathing heavy. Then we see her in the hospital, and he's, like, pumping down on her chest, and...
And we know that she has cancer, and we know that she wasn't taken by the lab, and
but
she
for
just...
a quick second, when we saw her with the shaved head, did anyone think...
I definitely did, because we've seen 11. Them fake a death before. So I was definitely thinking, well, are these real nurses? Did they inject her with something to make her go into the state where she stays like that for long enough that she's barely alive, but people think she passes for dead?
I'm with you, too.
I mean, I was thinking all these things for season two. I'm like, oh my gosh, this could still be her. I don't know.
I think that what they were trying to show us is sometimes you can fight for something as hard as you want and you're going to lose anyway. And I think that's what we saw with him with Sarah, which is what motivated him with Will. He's fighting and realizing there's something I can do in this situation when there wasn't anything I could do in the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't look at that as maybe somehow we'll find her and she's 12 or 13 or 9 or whatever. I looked at that as he's been through this before, he couldn't do anything, and now he's not helpless.
I was also wondering if we saw, I know they said 6 people were taken, but that blonde, there was like a blonde girl in there. Did you guys catch that blonde?
Yeah.
I was like,
That's why I got suspicious. Like she looked. I mean, we got.
But
blondes,
that's
we
just
got
my,
like
we, my brain
we,
going there.
Yeah, I mean, we saw her pass away, unfortunately, and watching Hop in the stairwell, like that was such a guttural, just real moment. Like you find the only private place you can in a very public place like a hospital, and he just like you can like Hop is the kind of guy who like I doesn't show emotion very often in public, and so he just escaped. And it just poured out of him.
And watching his seemingly good relationship with his wife at that time.
Yeah. They looked very happy.
Well, not happy in the moment, but with each other.
Well, no,
well,
when they were outside
of
the park.
Gotcha.
I mean, he was running around with his daughter. He was active. He was smiling, which we don't see him smile that much.
Looked like a great dad.
Yeah, he looked like a really good dad.
Mm-hmm.
So on the flip side of this, we're back with Jonathan and Nancy, and after the monster was burnt and all that, the lights start flickering again because we find out that Hopper and Joyce hear the monster scream, so they run to the house. And as they're on the opposite side, they're creating all the lights to kind of follow them, and Jonathan could feel that it was his mother. That was a dope scene. I loved seeing that kind of, that they showed us both parts. Whereas with Will, it was like, we didn't really see Will on the other side.
Yeah. I would have been curious to see how he, like, controlled the lights. Like, maybe he has to, like, go and touch each one as he does it.
Well, it seemed like Hopper and Joyce, it was just every footstep, wherever they would walk under, it would just kind of...
Oh, I just meant because, like, the letters and stuff. Oh, yeah, he had to be, like, super controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's probably just like tapping it, and like when it would, I'll bet you there's like another the other side, like to him, like when she's like in the cubby hole, he's just like touching the bundle of lights.
But that would mean that dimension changes as our dimension changes. So do you guys think as Joyce writes the letters on the wall, they appear in the other dimension?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
or do you think he's able to somehow sense and see where the letters would be?
I think they appear in the other dimension. Like I think basically this isn't like another dimension like we compared it in an earlier episode to Earth 2. It's not like a completely separate place. Like this is basically like an alternate, it's like a different spectrum of light. So both things are always there at the same time, but you can only interact with certain pieces of the environment because like ultraviolet light can pass through certain things.
Well, it's almost like a shadow. Like if we were to sit and shake hands in real life, our shadows are shaking. Like that kind of a...
Sort of,
it goes one way but not the other though, because if he was able to communicate where he was from and whatever changes he made to that dimension would come to our dimension, then he would have just written his mom a message.
But I don't think it works the other way.
That's what I'm saying.
There are probably ways that the Netherworld will affect the real world, but not in ways like that. Not in like the physical,
tangible
kind. Yeah, tangible things. There are only pieces that you can affect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like energy, because energy would be existed. Would energy would pass between the dimensions, so he can affect it that way. Mm-hmm. So you put energy into a bulb by touching it and connecting the two pieces of the spectrum.
But it is interesting that that dimension is directly correlated with ours, but ours not necessarily correlated the same way,
right,
connected the same way.
It's got to be a real weird, like, I mean, this creature growing in this existence, if it was just, like, alive and going through, it's like seeing, buildings are going up, like, the environment's changing through things that it's not even able to physically affect. And that's just, like, the idea of that existence is, like, fascinating, and it, of course, would create a monster.
Right. Yeah. With the boys, one moment I really enjoyed was Mike and Eleven. In that scene where he was telling her, you're going to have parents, like, you're going to live downstairs, my mom's going to take such good care of you, and I'm like...
So you're going to be my brother?
Yeah. Like, my mom's going to be your mom, my sister's going to be your sister, but I'm not going to be your brother. He's like,
because you're going to be my girl.
You my woman, girl.
He just described what happens when you marry into a family.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. So this was Corey and Topanga at their finest. I really enjoyed this moment. It seemed like Eleven was a little startled for a second, but then was kind of into it.
Because she just doesn't... She knows what she feels, but she doesn't understand what that feeling is.
Like, that kiss, though.
That kiss, though.
That kiss, though. That kiss, though.
Oh, that kiss.
Too cute. Loved it. Too Hallmark cute. Card all the way.
So clear that neither of them knew what to do, and it was just, it was just so cool.
Let me just
so
go nice. For it.
You have
go
to think about it. The actors, too. I'm sure that this may be one of their first kisses, so it's probably one of those uncomfortable moments, and we could sense the tension and awkwardness, but it's also perfect.
It was perfect. It's
perfect.
But he invites her to the snowball. Too cute.
He
loved
just wants
all
to take her to a dance and live happily ever after.
Promise.
Mike's such an old soul.
Yes.
I appreciate you, Mike.
So come to the snowball, and she's like, I don't know what that is.
And that happened while Dustin was raiding the chocolate pudding, mad at the cafeteria lady for lying to him, telling him they were all out.
I feel you, Dustin.
Yep.
Cafeteria women do that sometimes. You'll ask for the string cheese, they'll pretend it's not there, and you both know it's there, but they're pretending it's not. And with the pudding, you don't mess with Dustin and his pudding. I felt that situation.
Dustin, in that moment, when he finds it, Mike, I found the chocolate pudding!
Yeah.
Don't worry, we're not hiding from anyone or anything.
Yeah. We don't have the feds after us right now.
So they see
priorities.
This light outside. Mike, instead of looking through the wall of windows, Michael, he runs outside to find out that it is the CIA. Carol and the lab men start chasing after them.
Yeah, Dustin saves the day again. His hunger for chocolate pudding got them all out of that building. I mean, I guess they got cornered anyway, but it saved
but
them
it
for saved, a few minutes.
It gave him a couple minutes to, you know, have a plan to know that they are about to get rolled on instead of it being a surprise attack, you know?
Is Dustin our MVP?
I think, yeah.
Dustin...
Well, Eleven's kind of our MVP, but...
Oh, everybody by the end of this needs to pick a season one MVP.
All right. I already know mine. Done.
Okay. All right. I like it.
Here's where Eleven had her scene of the whole series, because when I tell you, I thought she was going to flip these people, break their arms. No, she didn't. She just stared at them and destroyed them internally.
They are...
That's... Just amazing.
There's no words amazing. For what she
there really
just
wasn't
did.
Because I tried to like go back to so many series where you like are waiting for that build up moment, that epic fight against the bad guy, and it was just so simple, but it was so intense.
She didn't need to like snap all their necks or anything. She's just like she basically like juices all of their brains.
Yeah.
Is it sad?
And at the
that
same
I
time
loved it, that it happened to Carol.
Oh yeah, F her. She took out. She took out our like the nicest like restaurant owner in the entire town.
How many of these people do you think Eleven has seen before? How many of these people does she recognize?
Probably most.
So do you think that part of this was a personal vendetta?
I think it was kind of her being like, "You guys have messed with me for the long time. For the last time, I'm standing up for myself and my friends. I'm going to protect these people because they are the good ones, and you guys are bad."
Which is why she said to Dr. Brennan, bad.
And even if she doesn't know their faces, then personally, she knows who they are with and what they represent. They are the bad men.
Any updates on our Papa theories? Are we still thinking the same thing?
So he did say, yes, I'm your Papa here. And he's telling her, you know, I want to take you back to the lab and make you better. I still think that he is her biological father.
I still think not.
I'm 50-50.
I'm 50-50 too.
I can't, because I can, like, if my creative brain wrote this, I could go both ways with it. I could see, in a freak way, I could see him being Papa, and it's just like, you know what I mean? Because in the 70s, like, hippie shit.
Yeah. I wonder if they even know yet. They haven't had to make the decision.
Yeah, I think that's why they left it open-ended. It's totally up for interpretation, and maybe it's something that we'll get to explore if there's a season two, which, based on how this ended, there better be a season two.
Is it possible that Papa could be grandfather?
I mean, like, technically, yeah, he's old enough that he could be a grandfather. I somehow doubt if, like, so, like, that would imply, you would be implying that Terry Ives is his daughter.
Yeah.
She sued him directly, and there's no mention of them being related. So I feel like that would come out if, like, the press is covering a lawsuit
between or whoever the two she people. Had the child with, he's their father.
That is possible.
Did they say what happened to him? Did they say anything what happened to June's
dad?
No. I still don't think that he would be doing all the experiments on someone that he is like either related to or like is like dating or in love with somebody he's related to. Mm-hmm. 'Cause they're performing like real messed up experiments. You got to be, and like, he doesn't seem to me like a crazy scientist where he's like, yes, torture everyone. He's like, no. So he's like, dark things have to happen in the pursuit of science, which you can argue the, like, the good or the bad side of that, but he's not intrinsically evil.
I don't know if I agree.
I think that's why I think he is the father, because I think he saw this child, knew it would have abilities, and his scientific side of his mind was thinking, I need to know what she can do. And instead of nurturing like a father, I don't think he has that ability.
Almost like Hopper, how Hopper doesn't have that connection.
Yeah, he doesn't have that connection. So his mind is, this is what he knows, so this is what he's going to do.
Well, the other interesting part is that we never see what really happens to Dr. Martin. You know, the monster broke through the wall, and then, you know, kind of pushed him out the way.
It jumped him. I have to think he's gone. Like, okay. We didn't see, like, look, in sci-fi and comic books, you see the body, like, close up on the body, there's always a chance, but
I know, because
those other people is dead. They were pools of blood.
But we kind of, season two, I feel like we would need a doctor.
I think he's still around.
I think he might be too. Tabby
and Evan. I think he's still around and wherever Eleven is.
Okay.
Like, Dr. Mind's just running through
them. Oh, like, it tackled him and took him. Like, even though it was, like, on top, like, tearing him apart. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, like, brought him into the other dimension with him.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It tossed him into the other dimension. It cut away before.
Like, that's the thing. They didn't linger on him. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's very possible that, like, what looked like a bloody, gory death to us is, I mean, like, that's the thing. In season two, like, you can explore that. You can get more. You can do, like, the other side of that situation. Like, there's all kinds of ways you can take it.
Ooh, that would be interesting. So the monster comes into the room with the boys. I love you guys, but whose David and Goliath idea was that?
At first I thought it was going to be like a video game boss where, like, you have to wait for it to attack and it, like, opens its flaps and it's like, it's exposed, shoot now. And you have like 4 seconds to, like, shoot it right in the middle. But then it, like, flew back. I was like, whoa. What? But that hero moment where Eleven just walks out, like, da-da-da-da-dun, da-da-dun, da-da-dun, boom.
And pushes Mike back and is like, hey, I've got this, guys. I've got this. That was definitely a personal thing for her. This is the monster. Watching the two of them face off was really incredible.
She's tired, and she feels to blame for it.
Yeah. 11, more like number one.
Hey!
Number one in our
hearts. 11 because you number one both times. You get two the ones.
Number one in the day, number one in the night.
Hey! In the real world and on the other side.
Yes! Mm.
You guys done?
Yeah.
Yep.
You good? Okay. I'm glad we all got that out of our system.
But what I am going to do anytime anyone picks on me or does something, I'm just going to stare at them and just be like...
Yep.
Goodbye, Roxy.
Seems about right.
Good
to
night,
me.
Roxy.
No, that was so sad.
That was adorable. It was adorable. And it was a, you know what? It was a great way for their like arc to end. Yeah. Like at the tail end of the season, just like their relationship built up. It went up. It went down. It went up. It went down. And they just like they ended it on a perfectly beautiful note where like it was sad, but it had to happen
in a heroic
way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
I was with it. What were you guys going through? Did we think when 11 approached the monster? Did we think 11 was gonna be gone? Did we assume she was just gonna whoop its butt?
I knew she was gonna be gone because I've been saying for a while that at some point she was going to sacrifice herself for her friends. So I knew the sacrifice was coming. I didn't want it to happen because I still wanted her to come back and get to have a bed in the basement. And Mike's mom to give her Eggos and, you know, not have to eat scraps off the floor.
I just like with Will at the end, it's like, well, I thought in the moment that she was just going to, like, be able to open up a portal and, like, send it through and, like, save the day. Yeah. But, like, that's the thing. The show has had those moments where as TV watchers, because we watch so much TV... Like you can sometimes trace the patterns, right. But it's good like filmmaking when you can see it happening. Part of you knows like, well, of course Will's gonna be fine, like just the nature of the show. But like you're still stressed out and like I don't know what she's gonna do, if she's gonna break the monster's neck, send it through the portal, or if it's gonna kill her and break free. Like anything could have happened, and it was intense.
It was intense. Yeah, it was really, really intense. But yeah. I think that we'll talk about this down the line, but not The Last of Her.
Oh, no way.
Definitely not.
Or The Last of the Monster, to be quite honest. But so Will wakes up, and he's in the hospital. I loved his connection with Jonathan. First, I loved everyone waiting in the waiting room.
Yeah.
And Dustin on Lucas.
That was so cute.
But I love the connection Jonathan and Will now have. Because I felt like it was, you know, not that we saw moments of them when they were close together, but then it seemed that they kind of, it was, you know, Will does his thing with his friends and Jonathan's kind of in his own. Like when Joyce basically said to Jonathan, "You're not alone. You've never been alone. I'm your," like, that was a cool moment for me because I think a lot of people go through that. And to see that and put it in this kind of a light, in the fact of, like, Jonathan feels he has to be the man. He feels like he has to take care of his family. To have your mom say stop and be a mom and say, you don't have to be that. I love that. And then to see him step in with Will and take care of him, I was here for it, Jonathan.
Tragedy causes families to go one of two ways, and I'm glad to see that it seems like this family is going to go together as opposed to apart.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really glad to see that, too, and both of them at his bedside when he woke up.
Yeah.
Mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
A new mixtape. Mixtapes are the best. Bring them back, guys.
I also love when the boys ran into the hospital and they were like, oh my god, we met the coolest person while you were gone. And like, she can shoot things and like, oh, she's totally cool.
Troy peed his pants.
My favorite was just like, they didn't even start with all that. They started with like, we had a funeral for you. And like, Ashley was crying at the funeral. Like, they started with the gossip first. They're like, not even talking about like monsters and like Superpower Girl. Like, that was secondary to like, there's a girl crying over your dead body, well, man. You got it.
It takes 8 hours to tell this story. So at some point, they'll tell him, but not right now.
I don't know. I think the kids did a pretty good job in 30 seconds there.
That's true. But if he's in the hospital bed, maybe he should really get a laptop, pop open the Netflix, start watching, and see what happens.
So time travel is now a thing because we're in 1983, so he's going to have to fast forward a few years.
Well, it's about to be 1984 because 1 month later.
Bum, bum, bum.
We see the boys in the basement playing their Dungeons and Dragons again.
Right back, like nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get that one glimpse from Mike looking at the fort and thinking about Eleven. So I was glad that he was nostalgic at least, and it wasn't like, all right, she's gone, who cares?
That wasn't just nostalgia, though. Like, he knocked that fort down. He put it back up and set up. He's like, this is ready for Eleven as soon as she gets back.
That's
like
true.
She will have her home the instant she comes back from the netherworld.
Oh my gosh, I just got chills, Zach.
I literally did.
Oh my gosh.
Really cute.
Oh, we love Mike and Eleven. Jonathan picked his brother up from game night.
Yeah, T was really excited about that move.
I was really excited. And then I realized, oh yeah, it's snowing outside, so he probably didn't ride his bike over in the first place because it's kind of cold. But I am happy that they're being responsible adults and the kids are now being chauffeured to their friend's house and being picked up. When they were walking out of the house, and this is what I was going to say earlier, when I saw Jonathan there and I saw Nancy running down the stairs, I wanted them to be together in that moment and her run down to like give him a cue.
I thought she was going to jump into his arms in her cute little yellow Christmas cardigan, I still thought, like, oh, maybe, like, she just gave him a present, and, like, he's like, oh, I didn't get you anything. It's like, oh, this is early, like, it's that weird, like, oh, we started dating, but it's, like, a major holiday, like, what's the protocol here?
Like, how much do we spend?
Yeah.
And even at the kiss on the cheek, I thought, like, oh, okay, so maybe they're, like, just, they're they haven't really dove into it, because, you know, there's a lot of fallout when, like, all that stuff just went down.
Yeah.
But then she calls and curls up to Steve.
Yeah, she did.
Well, now here's my other thing about the Steve thing. I don't know if he fully gets his redemption from me because I feel like Steve should have been the one to give him the camera.
Yes.
Steve's the one who broke it. Nancy giving him the camera is kind of like, here's another high hope.
Or because when she gave it to him, we didn't know that she was with Steve at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe because he knows they're together, he knew it was kind of a joint gift from the both of them.
That's so awkward.
Also, where they were.
Implied, like, we're a couple, so it's from both of us. It's not just from me.
That's awkward.
Hold on, T. Steve saved Nancy's life. He stepped up and saved her life. She was about to get eaten by the freaking monster. Jonathan was always there, but Steve had a lot to figure out in 20 seconds, and he did, and he left, and he came running back to save her life. So I'm not saying that Jonathan isn't an amazing guy, because I think he is, but if she wasn't with Steve, I would think, wow, that's kind of crappy. He really did turn out to be a great guy. You were with him to start. What happened? Why did you ditch him for Jonathan?
Because she started having feelings for Jonathan.
And she had feelings for Steve.
Trumps.
What? And maybe she's
they can
Steve.
Be together now, but season two, it's not going to last.
Oh, girl,
her and Steve are not forever.
You watch too much TV to realistically think that her and John are going to be together season two. We're talking season three, four minimum.
No, I'm saying her and Steve won't be together for season two.
Yes,
I'm not saying
will.
She'll be with
Steve's dying end of season two.
No. Jonathan, here's the thing.
Sorry, to the character who plays Steve.
Jonathan, I need you to move on. Like, this girl, she's kissing you on the cheek when she's like, the other man's like right in the
that
other
is
room.
True.
Like, pretty sure he's in line of sight. Like, this is somebody who's gonna play with your heart. Do not take that as a sign. Move on. Find yourself another
new
girl.
True. He should move on.
He should.
But
for the sake of the story and the heroes,
it'll make her jealous and then she'll want you more.
Alright, you're too good of a guy. Thanks for taking nude pictures of me.
Roxy, just holding on to
that. We all make mistakes. Really bad mistakes.
I mean, it was her back. He didn't get any titty shots.
Yeah, her bra was still on.
If she had turned around, he would have taken that picture, and you know.
Okay. We see Joyce, Christmas dinner. We see Will.
Those potatoes look disgusting.
I mean, and Jonathan, don't lie to your mother.
Don't
lie!
Like,
they had a tough month.
They did. Okay.
Yeah. I would not eat those potatoes. I don't care what my mom looks
like. It feels
like
the first time they're sitting down for a holiday meal together in a very long time. Because she said in an earlier episode that she works most Christmas, holiday, every New Year. She's always at work.
How do you make potatoes that runny?
They're probably boxed potatoes.
It's 1983.
Very easy, actually. Yeah.
That's true.
You went to college, so
just be happy it wasn't mac and cheese. Wow. No, that would have been, like, runny scary. Mac and cheese. Right, that would have been real gross.
So Will is like, oh, I just got to go wash my hands. Red flag that a child that young is thinking like that.
What's happening here?
What? He coughs up a nether bug.
It's alive. Like,
it's alive.
Like, is this the first time he's coughed it up? Does he know that these are in?
No, this is not the first time. This looked like, oh, I've got to run to the bathroom to wash my hands because I know I'm about to cough up a bug.
So Will's definitely doing it to hide something. My brain jumped to two places when I saw this. There's one, like, okay, there's like eggs in his belly, and like I don't know if like they're just like getting out real, like, really slow or something. Like, he's like an incubator now, or Will's not Will. Oh my god! And Will's been like taken over by the monster, who is like now taken true human form instead of just a humanoid shape.
Initially, I thought that, but now that you're saying the incubator thing, I'm wondering if that tendril was putting almost like eggs or things, so that way they could easily cross over to this world.
Yeah.
I'm wondering that too, because that was just gross. He had that thing in his mouth and now he's coughing up bugs, and just seems like something that is shady.
That bug is now down there alive in the drain. Sewer system. Like, water's probably not going to kill it.
No, water probably makes it grow.
Someone's going to be drinking tap water.
There's a bunch of them down there in the sewer now, and they're bulletproof and they're coming back.
Yeah, I had all of these same thoughts, and also the additional thought of how long has this been going on? Was this something, I know we talked about it the first time, but if it's not the first time, how often, how frequent has this happened? How many of these things has he coughed up? Where have they all gone to?
We've seen him coughing since we saw him wake up in the bed and the boys were talking to him, and he had that strong cough, and I was like, oh my gosh, that sounds like my grandma. And Mike asked him, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. So then when I heard the cough again, I was like, okay, that means something's not right, and Will, tell your mama. Just tell her.
And that goes to Zach's point that it might not be Will, because if it was Will, why wouldn't he tell his mom?
That's what I'm saying. There's almost no reason. The only thing I think is that he doesn't want people to be worried about him, but that seems silly. Like, this kid's been through a lot. He knows all these people care about him. And I know kids, like, hide stuff, but this seems like he is intentionally keeping it back. And that worries me.
Well, also what worries me is that we saw Hopper leave the hospital and get picked up in that car.
Right?
Then we see him. We don't know what he did in that car. Then we see him go to the police station, get some Eggos and leftovers. Yeah, a month later. And he might be aware that 11 is still out there. He has this box in the woods.
I think he's set up. He must be working with the lab at this point. He's working with them. Because he's like now the only person who's gone onto the other side and come back. That's why they like want him on their team. So he's probably on the lab's squad. But this is his way of he's figured out that 11 is out there, and they can't get her back because she's the only person that could open a rift. Mm-hmm. So he's doing the only thing he can to keep her alive because there's nothing to eat over there. He's just leaving her the only things that he can, favorite foods.
Junk foods and Eggos.
Hopper claimed to Joyce that he made a deal with the lab that they wouldn't say anything and they could go get Will back. But what we actually hear Hopper say to the doctor is, hey, you can't tell anybody that this is what's happening. And that's what we know what the deal is. You can't tell anybody that this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like when he sat in that room, he volunteered as tribute. He said, I will do whatever it is, X, Y, and Z, if you'll let us go do that. Now, maybe it is be a caretaker. Maybe he's feeding her because she's not even on the other side anymore. Maybe she's here, but she has to live in the wild. Or there could be a whole number of things. But he struck a deal that we are unaware of at this time.
Okay.
Mic drop, I guess.
It kind of is, because it's just like...
Because piggybacking off of what you're saying, what I think is happening is that these organizations, it always looks like they're destroyed, and maybe on the surface level they are, but below ground they are still up and running. And that's why I believe that 11 is down there still being held captive again with Dr. Martin and his team that is still alive, or maybe a new team, and maybe Eleven has found a way, maybe this box, she can teleport the foods to her in some way. But I think Copper is definitely working with them, and there's something weird going on, and the lab is not shut down. They're still up and running, in my mind, at this point.
Well, I mean, I guess that would be the great segue into some final thoughts.
I'll say it once, I'll say it twice, I'll say it 11 times. What are these other numbers that we're missing? I predicted earlier that it may be not a number, but an age that they started doing something. But whatever it is, there are other ones out there. Are we not at the point where anybody's looking or saying 11? Huh, what came previously? Somebody has to ask that question at some point. And I think that Joyce might be the one to do it, because I think she actually cared a lot about 11. Mm-hmm. I think that at some point, Will and Mike and the boys are going to convince Joyce, hey, remember where Will was? 11's probably in the same place. We need to help her and the other people, the other 10 or whatnot. So those numbers, I'm looking at you.
I feel like it's going to be Hopper.
That's going to realize?
Because if he's working with these people and stumbles across something, it might kind of spark something in him to do investigating. Yeah. I don't see Hopper as, like, wanting to work with them. Like, here, just save everybody. Like, he's a smart guy. I feel like he knows, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to work with you guys.
I think he's keeping his enemies closer.
Yeah.
He's double agenting them. And staying close enough so that he can learn, still know what they're up to, and far enough away that they're, you know, not going to attack him in any way.
Is there any way that Hopper is their new test subject? And somehow he's undergoing these experiments?
Never say never.
Yeah. I mean, I just gotta say, this season was such a great ride.
Yeah.
It was so much fun. Like, and there is so much more to do. Like, with 11 now having swapped places with Will, like, you could totally see a season 2 where they, like, basically have to do this again, where they have to go in to save 11. And who knows what that means? Does that mean that we have to, like, make somebody on our team go through the stuff that 11 went through? Is that, do we have to find 12, 13, 14, 15, 27?
Someone that can open it.
Yeah, somebody that can do this and control it more. Mm. Moving a show like this into a season 2 is all about exploding the world. Usually season 1 is like, okay, we're focused on the characters and getting to know our places, but now it's like time to just blow up and go into, like, what else does this mean? If this netherworld exists, there's not just one creature from there and some bugs. Like, there's a whole universe in that spectrum, and I want to know everything about it.
Like, I want to come back and see 11, like, controlling monsters when they go into the other world. She's like the queen of the netherworld.
I can even see, I love these actors, and I don't know, but I could totally see a version of this show jumping, like, 8 years into the future.
And then Will gets some sort of sign from her that she's still alive, and then he becomes obsessed with it again.
Yeah.
We need another season with these boys. I can't.
Yeah. I agree.
They can't grow up.
But as far as this season goes, you guys knew it was coming. I want your MVPs.
Dustin, no question. Like, he was my favorite character from, like, the moment I met him, and then he just kept, every episode he would cement that place even more.
Yeah.
He was so much fun to watch. He was intelligent. He was the one who, like, calmly, like, saw the situations, but then he would just randomly be like, chocolate pudding, guys, it's fun time.
Mm-hmm. All right, T, what do you got?
I gotta stick with my boy Lucas. Because he went from being on the team to off the team to back on the team. He's been through his ups and downs, and he the whole time questioned everything and never just accepted the answer that was given. He questioned 11 the whole time, because even though I didn't agree with it a lot of times, because I know 11, this is a stranger who's coming into his friendships and everything. We don't know who she is, what her real sort of ideals are. So for him to question all that, I was like, yes. And then I think some of his facial reactions to other things that were happening around him all the time were always on point. Like when they woke up in the hospital and Dustin jumps up and Lucas just goes, come on, man. Like that look of, come on, what are you doing here? So I got to stick with Lucas.
When he shouted in this episode, he's just like, eat shit.
Yeah, I loved that. Jesse, who's yours?
As much as I have to say Dustin, because watching a show like this, the comedy was just really nice to take you out of that. Yeah. I have to give it to Joyce, because honestly, looking at it as a whole, it could have went Terry Ives. It could have went a mother just going crazy in her head, but she always knew. She always believed. She fought. She, like Lucas, she would never take the answer that was given to her. She just knew something else was out there, and she never let that stop. And even when Terry said five or however many years, she looked at it like, am I going to really have to wait this long? Like, but I know he's still alive. And just to take it outside of that, I half the time couldn't even recognize Winona Ryder as that, because yeah, she did such a phenomenal job of this motherhood, and seeing her with 11, like, it just, for me, took the cake.
Joyce was a close second for me, but I have to go 11.
I thought you were going to say Steve. No. We already started all rolling our eyes.
I can't say Steve. I have to go 11. 11 flipped the truck. 11 made somebody fly. 11 saved everybody from the monster at the end. And 11 is somebody who has no reason to be good. Could be a horrible person because she's grown up without guidance. But 11 was really good and held true to her promise, because a promise is something that shouldn't be broken.
That never breaks.
We learned that very
early. Friends don't lie.
Mine is 11.
And I think that for everyone, the overall message to take home from this show is, don't be a Joyce. Or no, don't be a Karen. Don't be a Karen.
Definitely be a Joyce.
We were talking about Joyce, so that was on my mind, but it was Karen. Don't be a Karen.
Don't be a Ted.
No, definitely don't be a Ted. But one thing I gotta say is, I authentically love that we all had someone different, because, right, and we honestly probably could switch them around too, because this cast was phenomenal. The Duffer Brothers, like, first of all, congratulations, because you guys really thought this show out, and it was delicious to watch this show. Like, there's no other word, because it just was, you took me into a world in one season. I'm here. I can't wait for another season. So let's get going on that. Netflix, congratulations again, just on finding amazing, epic shows and choosing to give them to us in a bingeful way, because we appreciate that. But we want to know, who is your favorite character? Who is your favorite MVP? Let us know what you thought. Did it end the way you guys wanted it to end? And what do you think is going to happen for a season 2? Leave your comments down below. Make sure you guys hit us up at youtube.com/Netflix. Subscribe, hit that like button. Also, make sure you guys, after each episode, you guys are checking us out on iTunes. Download the podcast. It's free, Stranger Things After Show. And keep in contact with us. You guys can tweet me at DJ Jesse J.
You guys can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer. And thank you so much for sticking with us this season. You were awesome.
And you can find me at the Tiana Hobson. Love you all. Thanks for watching.
I'm at that Zach Wilson. Binge on.
And exactly, we're going to miss you guys until next season, but it's Netflix, so you can always binge watch us. Till next time, peace.